This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Hello and welcome. I'm Natalie Pinchem, and I'll be reading synopses of some of the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery on April 12, 2013. The topics of the articles featured in this podcast are neurosurgical education, the peripheral nerve, oncology, vascular disorders, subdural hematomas, traumatic brain injury, and neurosurgical history. Society of Neurological Surgeons Bootcamp Courses, Knowledge Retention and Relevance of Hands-on Learning After 6 months of postgraduate year one training. A clinical article by Nathan Selden and colleagues. In 2009, the Accreditation Council for Graduate Medical Education, or ACGME, incorporated the internship year into neurological surgery residency training. This change created both the need and the opportunity to teach a national, systematic curriculum for fundamental skills, knowledge, and attitudes to neurological surgery residents at the inception of training. The Society of Neurological Surgeons comprises academic department chairs and residency program directors. In 2010, the Society introduced a course for all ACGME-accredited U.S. residency training programs to accomplish this goal, referred to as Neurosurgery Bootcamp. In the first year, 94% of entering residents attended one of the 6 regional bootcamps. In the 2 subsequent years, attendance reached 100%. Courses at the bootcamp include didactic lectures and model-based simulations of both important intensive care unit procedures, as well as basic cranial operative skills. Previous studies by the current authors have demonstrated very high ratings for the quality and impact of the courses, as well as statistically valid evidence of knowledge learning. The present study demonstrates the retention of knowledge learning 6 months after the courses, halfway through postgraduate year one training. In addition, residents confirm the value and relevance of skills learning, especially for those procedures they performed frequently in the live clinical environment after the courses during the first half of their postgraduate year one training. Surgical bootcamp courses have subsequently been adopted at a national specialty level, both in other countries and by other specialties. These courses appear to promote professionalism, safety, and excellence in educational and patient care outcomes. Intrapelvic sciatic notch schwannoma, microsurgical excision using the infragluteal approach. A case report by Nicola Montano and co-authors. Benign neurogenic tumors at the sciatic notch that are purely intrapelvic have rarely been reported. Because of this tumor's particular location, a transabdominal or combined transabdominal gluteal approach is used to achieve total resection. However, the transabdominal approach carries a remarkable surgical risk because of the manipulation of intraperitoneal viscera. In this article, the authors describe a 59-year-old woman harboring a purely intrapelvic sciatic notch schwannoma that is extrinsic to the sciatic nerve. The tumor was totally removed via a classic infragluteal approach, preserving sciatic nerve function. The patient's postoperative course was uneventful, and she was able to stand the day after the surgery. Thus, the infragluteal approach allowed safe, effective resection of an intrapelvic benign neurogenic tumor at the sciatic notch that was extrinsic to the sciatic nerve, thus avoiding the risks of the more invasive transabdominal approach. Moreover, the operation was very well tolerated by the patient, without relevant postoperative discomfort. Combination of hypoglossal facial nerve surgical reconstruction and neurotrophin 3 gene therapy for facial palsy. A laboratory investigation by Li Wei Zhang and co-authors. Facial paralysis due to facial nerve injury affects up to 10% of patients undergoing the removal of cerebellopontine angle tumors. A subsequent loss of facial symmetry and expression has great psychosocial impact on these patients. Reconstruction of the facial nerve to restore facial symmetry and expression is still a significant clinical challenge. The authors of the present study assessed a modified hypoglossal facial nerve anastomosis method of treating facial nerve injury in rats. Surgical reconstruction relied on hypoglossal facial nerve side-to-end anastomosis through an interposed pre-degenerated nerve graft. Prior to transplantation, the pre-degenerated nerve graft was genetically engineered using lentiviral vectors to induce a high transient expression of neurotrophin 3, a neurotrophic factor that can enhance axonal regrowth. After a minimum of 4 months of post-surgical recovery, outcomes were assessed via functional, electrophysiological, and histological examinations. The results showed that this treatment could lead to rapid and effective reinnervation of paralyzed facial muscles, even when the facial nerve reconstruction is performed 9 weeks post-trauma, and therefore provided useful information for clinical treatment. The role of preoperative embolization for intracranial meningiomas. A review article by Ashish Harish Shah and colleagues. Over the last few years, the utility of preoperative embolization in the management of meningiomas has not been clear. In order to clarify its role for meningiomas, the authors conducted a systematic review of case reports, case series, and prospective studies to quantify the benefits and complications associated with preoperative embolization. The author's review found 459 patients who underwent preoperative embolization, for whom the complication rate was 4.8%. The potential benefits and indications for preoperative embolization are discussed. Careful selection of ideal cases for embolization may help reduce any procedure-related added morbidity. Future prospective studies involving the use of preoperative embolization in certain cases of meningiomas may further elucidate its potential benefit and risks. Pathomorphometry of ruptured intracranial vertebral arterial dissection, adventitial rupture, dilated lesion, intimal tear, and medial defect. A laboratory investigation by Ayako Roe and Norimasa Kageyama. This is the first report of the pathomorphometry of intracranial vertebral artery dissection. The authors investigated 50 autopsy cases of fatal subarachnoid hemorrhage due to ruptured vertebral artery dissection. The 0.2mm serial cross-sectional histological examination was performed around the ruptured vertebral artery length, which was about 3 to 4 centimeters in length. Detailed pathomorphometric measurements revealed that every ruptured dissection had a single adventitial rupture about 2 millimeters in length. While clinically detectable dilated lesions were about 9 millimeters in length, the underlying vulnerable vasculature covers about 1.3 to 1.5 centimeters, being confirmed as intimal tears and medial defects. Dilated lesions are a possible predictive factor for hemorrhagic dissection. Broader protection or observations of intracranial vertebral arteries would be desirable for preventing propagation of vertebral artery dissection. The authors offer an internal view of a ruptured vertebral artery for the first time. This view was three-dimensionally reconstructed from serial photomicrographs. In a video clip, the reader can also see the serial photomicrographs of a representative case aligned and digitized both longitudinally and transversely, just like a card trick. Furthermore, the authors propose a novel mechanism of vertebral artery dissection. Mild elevations of international normalized ratio at hospital day 1 and risk of expansion in warfarin-associated subdural hematomas. A clinical article by Marie Rauguski and co-authors. Warfarin-associated subdural hematomas are a common condition treated by neurosurgeons. Although neurosurgeons agree that reversal of warfarin-associated coagulopathy is necessary to prevent expansion of the subdural hematoma, there is considerable disagreement regarding the ideal international normalized ratio, or INR, to target. In this investigation, the authors retrospectively studied the outcomes of patients with warfarin-associated subdural hematomas. It was found that patients whose INR was reversed to the author's traditional target of 1.3 or less had rates of radiographic and clinically significant subdural hematoma expansion that was similar to those in patients whose INR was reversed to a target of 1.31 to 1.69. This study highlights the existing controversy regarding the ideal target INR in warfarin reversal and suggests that less aggressive warfarin reversal to a target INR of 1.31 to 1.69 is not associated with a markedly increased risk of subdural hematoma expansion. Further study is needed to define the ideal INR target to guide reversal of coagulopathy in patients with warfarin-associated subdural hematoma. Improvement in functional recovery with administration of cerebrolysin after experimental closed head injury. A laboratory investigation by Yanlu Zhang and co-workers. Traumatic brain injury is a leading cause of death and disability worldwide, for which there is no effective treatment. Cerebrolysin is a unique peptide preparation that mimics the action of neurotrophic factors. It is widely used for the treatment of stroke, dementia, and traumatic brain injury. In this study, the authors investigated the effect of cerebrolysin on neurological function in rats after closed head injury. Brain-injured rats received intraperitoneal injection of cerebrolysin, starting 1 hour after injury, and administered once daily for 2 weeks. Brain-injured rats receiving saline served as treatment controls. Compared with the saline-treated group, the cerebrolysin treatment group exhibited significant improvements in functional outcomes, evaluated by the Morris-Water-Maze test and sensory-motor function tests. The authors' data further demonstrate that cerebrolysin reduced neuronal cell loss and increased neurogenesis in the hippocampus and preserved axonal integrity in the striatum. Cerebrolysin treatment decreased matrix metalloproteinase 9 and increased vascular endothelial growth factor, which may contribute to neuroprotection and improved functional recovery after brain injury. These promising results suggest that cerebrolysin may be a useful treatment to improve the functional recovery for patients with closed head injury. Clinical, laboratory, and radiographic predictors of the occurrence of seizures following aneurysmal subarachnoid hemorrhage. A clinical article by George Ibrahim and colleagues. Which patients have seizures after aneurysmal subarachnoid hemorrhage? If this could be predicted, then anticonvulsants could be administered more selectively to patients with this disease, and side effects of the anticonvulsant drugs could be avoided. In this paper, the authors studied 413 patients who were entered into a randomized clinical trial of clazosentan. Clinical and radiological data were carefully collected in these patients. It was found that approximately 14% of patients had events recorded as seizures after a hemorrhage. In a multivariate analysis, it was found that patients with more subarachnoid blood and with subdural bleeding had greater risk for seizures. Charles Stent and the mystery behind the word stent. A historical vignette by Sudhir Ambekar and Anil Nanda. The authors discussed the life and work of the English dentist Charles Stent. It is intriguing to learn that the word stent has been derived from the name of a dentist who developed a material to obtain dental impressions. The authors also discuss other theories about the origin of the word stent and how the word has come into present-day use. It is important to know and acknowledge the history of stents because they have revolutionized many branches of medicine. Finally, the authors conclude by describing the birth of intravascular and intracranial stenting. Isocitrate dehydrogenase 1, what it means to the neurosurgeon. A review article by Tiffany Hodges and co-authors. Isocitrate dehydrogenase 1, or IDH1, is a key metabolic enzyme in the glycolytic pathway. Mutations of this enzyme are consistent and frequent in secondary glioblastoma multiform and lower-grade gliomas. Although IDH1 mutations confer a unique genotype that has been associated with a favorable prognosis, the role of the mutated IDH1 enzyme and its metabolites in tumor initiation and maintenance remains unresolved. Given that IDH1 mutations are homogeneously expressed and are limited solely to tumor tissue, targeting this mutation could potentially yield novel treatment strategies for patients with glioblastoma multiforme. This review emphasizes why the neurosurgeon should take interest in the IDH1 mutation when caring for patients with brain tumors. The following are addressed in this review: the function of IDH1 and its mutant form, the clinical role of IDH1 in gliomas, how to screen for mutated IDH1, therapeutic approaches to targeting mutated IDH1, and a novel engineering application of IDH1 mutational data in the synthesis of nylon. Thank you for listening to the Journal of Neurosurgery. The Journal of Neurosurgery mobile app is now available. You can find it in iTunes and the Google Play Store. Just search for JNSPG to download the app for your mobile device today. You can also follow the Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group on Twitter and now also on Facebook.